Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking, and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Ned Bolting.
I'm Adam Tranter.
And I'm Laura Laker.
And this time we are tackling the brilliantly titled movement known as Tactical Urbanism. You may not know what it is. I certainly didn't, but you're about to find out. Also known as DIY urbanism, it's a citizen-led approach to street space change, using quick and low-cost materials like planters, seating, and bollards. It's about reclaiming street space for people from cars, from parklets to pedestrian... I don't know when a park is a parklet, but we'll find out. To pedestrian plazas, to pop-up bike lanes. So this is really testing the microphone's ability to deal with peas, isn't it? And microphone pops. The likes of which appeared around the world during the pandemic. I don't know what's got into me today. I'm in a bit of a daft mood. But before we get onto that subject, and Laura's been out and about and doing some recording for us, I'd like to ask how everybody is. I'll start with you, Laura. How are you?
Yeah, well, thank you. What have I been doing? I've been cycling here, there, and everywhere. I went and got tested with Dame Sarah Story and her Young Academy riders. That was really fun.
So indoor turbo riding or something.
It was really fun, actually. Yeah, I had a great time. I've been doing planters. So that's.
And yesterday, I saw you said yesterday you went out and about with two laden panniers on the windiest day of the year so far. It was unbelievably windy in London yesterday, wasn't it?
Surprisingly windy. Yeah, I went to Paddington. And then left the bike there, took a train, and then I cycled back. I got a headwind on the way there, almost a minute and a half from missing the train. Oof. And then on the way back, I just had the most brilliant time. And I'd forgotten how fun it is riding with panniers, actually. It's a whole different experience. You feel the bike flexing.
Yeah.
It's quite fun.
It's brilliant when you get the wind direction right, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't remember when we last recorded a podcast, but I think I've been to San Remo since. I was commentating on a famous bicycle race in Italy called Milan San Remo. And for those of you who know the geography, San Remo itself is right on the kind of Ligurian coast of Italy, right next to the French border. So it's really not far from Monaco and Nice and places. So it's on that beautiful coastline. And it used to have San Remo, a kind of Belle Epoque, turn of the century railway line that ran all the way along the Ligurian coast, but obviously couldn't take high speed trains. So at some point in recent decades, they've built a high speed line inland and they closed the old train line along the coast. But rather than just letting it, you know, disappear, they turned it into a really extensive cycle track. All the way, I mean, it runs for tens of kilometres all the way along the coast. Oh, nice. It's beautifully maintained, cutting through tunnels all the time, cutting through these headlands. It's really well used, you know. It's a real asset to that coastline. And the day after I'd been working there, Kath, my partner, actually came out and joined me out there. And the next day we hired city bikes and we rode in for, I think it was the longest ride Kath had ever done, actually. We rode for about 3 hours into the strongest headwind along this coast I've ever experienced. But then we turned round and basically freewheeled back. It was absolutely wonderful, wearing big billowy clothes. So we acted like a sail sort of thing. That's what I've been
Sounds
up to.
Amazing.
What have you been up to, Adam?
I've been doing bits and bobs, actually. What have I been doing? I went to Ghent and I went to Brussels. That was really nice.
Wow. Love Ghent. I absolutely love Ghent.
Yeah. It was quite embarrassing, actually, because I went there and met the deputy mayor for transport, who's the person that kind of initiated their traffic circulation plan and has made it really good for cycling. And he was like, oh, have you been to Ghent before? I was like, oh, I don't think so. But it's just wonderful. Like, I love it. It's just brilliant. And then we cycled back into the town square, and I'd realised that I had been to Ghent before, but I was just totally inebriated on a stag do where I went to the Tour of Flanders like 10 years ago, and we stayed in Ghent, and it is magnificent. It is wonderful, and what they've done there is it's nothing short of amazing, actually. You know, it's the kind of thing that I was texting my wife straight away saying, we should go here on holiday, we should bring the kids will be able, my kids are 8, we'll be able to cycle here, you know, cycle around, all the stuff. So yeah, it's wonderful. And then I went to Brussels, which is obviously, you know, a much larger city. Everyone thinks their city is magical and different. You know, oh yeah, our city is very different, got these problems. But Brussels have got exactly the same, you know, issues as Birmingham, for example. So
yeah,
it was really good to talk to the people there that are working on kind of active travel and stuff. So that was great. And then we got given an absolute boatload, not that all my life is about working, but we got given an absolute boatload of money from government for active travel in the West Midlands. So
I'm reading. Laura's prepared some notes here.
Yeah, you can read it. We can do a drum roll if you want.
Okay, I'll do a drum roll on the microphone like this. Look, there you go. Adam has won £254 million for walking and cycling in the West Midlands. Is that right? Can that be right? That's a quarter of £1 billion.
Yeah. No, it's not totally right, because it's not me that's totally secured it. You know, there's a whole team of people that have gotten done it. Much of it was in the works already, but it's over the next 5 years. It's a city region sustainable transport settlement, and it's designed to get regions to invest in sustainable transport over, you know, in the next period of time, and active travel is a really big part of it for the first time, really. You know, most of this stuff goes on, you know, trains and buses and trams and all the stuff that it rightly should. But active travel's got a proper seat at the table now. So we're going to crack on.
Does it come from central government then, Adam?
Totally, yeah. So it's part of the significant amount of funding that the government, central government, are putting forward for active travel. And also you'll have heard the kind of bus back better and those kind of phrases and things like that. It's all, it's all being invested in the right stuff in transport. So it's great. It's really, really good.
Are you going to be able to spend it all in 5 years, do you think? It's quite a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Don't get me wrong, most local authorities have not done very much for active travel. Birmingham have been very good in comparison. And obviously, you know, we've got some ambitious local authorities, but you're going from spending hardly any money to lots of money. So we are very rapidly building capacity. It would be a learning journey, I'm sure, but we're trying to make sure we've got the right people, the best people there, and of course Active Travel England will help us as well. So yeah, I'm very, very pleased.
I wonder if you're kind of working in this field, if you have expertise in the field of like delivering active travel, if you'll be able to name your price at the moment, because there's a lot of demand, isn't there? Central government's going to be recruiting the kind of people delivering active travel measures, and regions are as well, and we're kind of short on staff. It just occurred to me, it's quite interesting times, isn't it?
Yeah, there's massive shortage in the transport sector, and a massive skill shortage in active travel as a niche of that. So yes, not that they can name their price, but yeah, there's a skill shortage and there's a lot of resource issues. So it's actually very hard for us at Transport for West Midlands to get the right people in those jobs and hiring them. So there's a lot of reliance on consultancies and things like that. I have a slightly alternative view on this, is that I actually think for us in the short term, this is a good thing, because I know who's good. The people who are good want to work with ambitious regions to do good work. So ultimately, we want to get started and work with some consultants that we know will do a brilliant job because they're active travel specialists. But it is very hard, and we do need to apprenticeships, all that stuff. We need to get going on that, really.
It does sound like a furiously large amount of money, because it is. And people might think, well, crikey, how can, I mean, that you really could make a vast difference with that. But I remember, you know, years ago, Chris Boardman used to have some amazing statistics at his fingertips that he'd often put out over the airwaves about the cost of renovating one single underground station versus active travel budgets and all that sort of thing. That, I mean, for example, if you take one infrastructure project that's not uncontroversial, that's upcoming in London, that the building of the Silvertown Tunnel. I mean,
totally uncontroversial.
All right, it's deeply controversial and ultimately an absolutely awful idea that I hope gets stopped still. How much money is that when you put it alongside, I don't know, building a big junction of a motorway or, you know, road infrastructure, I suppose is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I mean, these are colossal amounts of money. You've got things like the Lower Thames Crossing as well, which is a Highways England project. So there's obviously this road building budget, which a lot of people talk about, you know, the £28 billion or so for road building. And that goes into massive projects like that. You know, there's a roundabout called the, I think it's the Black Cat roundabout, which cost £1 billion on its own for a roundabout. So you could say, you know, the settlement we have from government for not all of transport, but for like big transport projects is the same as a roundabout, if you like. But we obviously get access to that kind of, you know, when we do, we don't have many roads projects, but it's a separate thing. But it is a lot of money. So to give you an example, costs about £1.5 million per mile to do a sort of fully protected, good, high quality cycle lane, to put it into context.
Wow, it's not free, is it?
it's not so free,
and it's a lot
there's
of money,
there's
yeah.
a lot that goes into it, and yeah. it's not just material costs, obviously, but utilities is a massive thing. So, like, you know, because a lot of the, you know, all our main infrastructure is underneath the roadways, so picking yeah. that up, moving it, it's a difficult thing to do. You know, a zebra crossing could cost something like £50,000 to £80,000, to put it into perspective. But don't get me wrong, we can do a lot of stuff with this money. So at the very least, looking at building over 100 kilometres of high quality cycleway, then, you know, there's obviously lots of other elements of infrastructure that can support active travel within that. So yes, it's a lot of money, we should say. We should never lose track of that. And we should also get more money from government on active travel. You know, I sound like I'm bigging up the government, but they are, you know, very much getting it right in terms of cycling and walking funding. We're going to be getting annual settlements for cycling and walking, as well as the funding that I just mentioned. So they're really going for it.
Mm. Do you have the same problem we have in London, where they don't know what's under the streets? Because I think some of the cycleways in London have been delayed because they start digging something up and then...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't know. Yeah, you don't know until you dig, in many cases. And even if you do know what's under there, it might not be how you expected it. So, yeah, it's very difficult. This has turned into a rather what are you up to?
I'm just interested.
Well, I mean, it was just a bit kind of like one-sided between the three presenters of this podcast, wasn't it? Because, you know, I've been on a windy bike ride and that's it. So that's pretty much... All I've got to report. Laura's been on a windy bike ride and nearly missed a train. and you've been handed £250 million by central government. Of course, we're going to ask you questions.
I have been on a windy bike ride as well, just to put it into perspective.
Okay, that's good. That evens things out totally. Yeah, I was talking to Adam about my planters the other day, and then he kind of says, mentions this money, and I'm like, well, that he's all over my the £9,000 I got for my planters.
to bring it back, I did spend £100 on of my own money, I should say, on plants to rejuvenate a little parklet that I created close to me. So it is certainly tactical urbanism season, and I've been doing normal stuff as well, so I don't want to paint a picture of stuff. So
okay, well, let's return to the subject at hand, as billed at the beginning of this podcast, which is tactical urbanism. And Laura, we're about to hear how you spent a couple of afternoons, as far as I can make out, right outside your front door. And it's
God, it was quite a lot, actually.
Give us the context of the story.
Yeah, so basically Newham Council launched this thing called the Community Assembly Fund, and it's a participatory budget, which they've got some priorities that people could vote on, and the top priorities included things like greening. And so they had this big pot of funds that people could bid for money for. And I'd had this idea. And weirdly enough, I'd done a PowerPoint presentation for nobody because that's how I like to spend it. I think it was lockdown at the time. I just had this idea. There's this grey concrete space near where I live. And it's really in need of something. And so, yeah, I had this idea to, you know, a few planters, just improve the place a bit. And then when the Community Assembly Fund came up, I did this pitch and then, you know, bid for it. And then people voted. I had to go around leafleting. And this was back when I was in isolation last summer and you were at the Velodrome doing the cargo bike stuff. That was, I'd just been sort of flyering and then I had to go into isolation. And then got the funding back in August and then just took ages to get the funds. So in about January, the funds came through and then it started off as a small project. It was a very long, long process. And I think I did my presentation first this time last year. And yeah, incredibly long process, but been massively transformative. So we've got these five huge planters in this area. We've managed to reclaim some car parking spaces from a sort of garage that had been semi-knocked down and was just being used as informal parking. So quite transformative, actually. And for £5,000, I got match funded by the people who, it's a council estate. It's the people who manage the estate. They put in another £3,000. And then the people who mow the lawns, I managed to rope them in because every time I saw someone in the area, I'd go up to them and just basically say, what are you doing? Can you help me with this idea?
What are you doing? Can you help us plant?
I'm just really good at badgering people. Yeah, I'm like polite but relentless. So.
All right. Well, listen. Without spoiling any more of what we're about to hear, let's hear about Laura's curtain twitching behaviour outside our front door, and then her tactical urbanism. This is how it all came about.
Morning. How are you doing? Trees have arrived. How are you?
I'm good. No, we're good, Laura. The plan is to put the liner in,
yeah,
and nail it in, and the stones will arrive with the soil.
Okay, they'll go inside the liner.
Yes, it's part of the soak away. So your water doesn't sort of sit there. And here as well. Hopefully the plan would be for the guy to hover the bag over and I can cut the bottom. Go back and forth with a shovel and a wheelbarrow.
Yeah. So we're not doing a lorry and a grabber, we're doing bags.
Maybe one of the two.
Okay.
But whatever comes.
Okay.
The plan is to get into park there.
Okay.
And if there's traffic, there's traffic. So
yeah,
be it.
Yeah.
We want to get this done.
Yeah.
Upcoming Saturday.
Planting day.
Bring everyone together.
Yeah.
It should be nice.
Yeah, it'd be nice, won't it? Are we going to drill holes in here? I'm a bit worried about the drainage.
I think we are. I think this one
is a bit smaller, isn't it?
I think the guys working here yesterday, they put a plan for today. So my role today, hopefully, once the soil gets here and the shingles, happy days.
I think it'd be really nice to have some seating there. Yeah, the lady upstairs is saying that her kids, because they don't have a garden, their kids are quite active and they don't really have anywhere to play. So,
okay.
I know, yeah, it'd be nice to have some sort of barrier for the cars, but I'm not sure how we're going to do that yet.
It's
so
the same as Nine Pacific, no one's got a designated parking spot.
Yeah, we just need like something just to mark off this area, because I think, I don't know, I can imagine being a parent, you'd think it feels quite open,
yeah.
Do you know, it's, yeah, anyway. The trees have arrived. There's Ace the Wonder Cat, as I like to call him. Fears no one and nothing. Hi, how you doing? Is this wood chip?
But if you want some,
I'd love some for the tree planting.
Let us know. I can bring some.
Yeah, it'd be good to sort of kill off the grass before we put the trees in. So apparently it's really,
okay.
It really like strangles the tree roots. Yeah. Such a small plant, you wouldn't think.
You don't want a lot. You just want to cover
just around
the
base. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
And I need to shoot off now.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to do it.
What, the benches?
Yeah, three sides, I think. Nice little seating area.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people are up for it. Sora's coming in. We've got a lorry with a lady lorry driver and a massive bucket thing. Dropping soil in. Are we going to have enough soil?
Should have enough soil.
Yeah. I was just looking from upstairs and
can you see
I can't see the soil.
The
can't see any soil in there.
You can't see any left?
No. You think we'll have enough?
I think so. I hope so.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, isn't it? It's pretty epic.
It is pretty epic. I think
having this gigantic lorry lifting in the soil.
Eight-wheeler lorry. A lady lorry driver.
Yeah. Which is very cool.
She's manning the high ab.
Womaning
the high ab.
That's right. Looking good.
One more delivery to come in, to go in the far corners, and then Chris will tidy up.
So, yeah.
Plants on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing two planting days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone said they couldn't make the first Saturday, and I realised actually we've got so much to do.
How many people have you got helping?
I don't know. You never know with these things. You ask people and they say yes, but if there's activity...
Refreshments down there.
Refreshments, yeah. Maybe I should try and get some supplies in. We need one of those...
tea, coffee, free cigarettes.
So that sounds like she's scraping metal there. I'm not sure.
She is.
Yeah. Are we getting another lorry load?
You will be.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why we're...
Few.
That's why the budget is like...
That's why the... We've just gone overboard with planters. Just got overexcited.
We're not going to need the same amount. We're going to need, because obviously they're smaller, but you're going to need 10 tonnes. So on the second lorry, we're going to have a couple of bags of compost as well. So this is
brilliant.
These people do compost as well.
Oh, amazing. Thank you.
So they're going to do some dumpy bags on top of there. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably do two dumpy bags here, three on here, two on there. And they can just plant it all in on the top surface.
Okay.
But we don't know how much we're going to need here until we have the aggregate in the bottom of the other two planters.
Okay. So how many tons of soil are we having?
It's 18 tons going in here.
In the two?
In those two, yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah. So normally these things do 16 tons. There's 18 tons coming into these two.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Wow. 28 tons of soil.
Yeah, it's quite a lot. I mean, it is quite a lot. Just as well she can grab it, or else we'd have problems with the guys. We'd have to have like four people shoveling it. And.
Oh my God, if you had to shovel 28 tons of soil.
It takes a day.
Yeah. We have it's all excitement here.
She's nearly done.
Yeah, she's good. So she's going to go back, get another load.
I think she'll come and get another load today. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see where we were today. We've still got to put the aggregate in those two.
Okay.
So we'll just level this all out, see how much compost we put in here, get the other two prepped up, and then get everything done tomorrow. I was thinking Thursday evening we'd be done. So it was originally a 2-day job, right?
Yeah.
I was thinking it'd be 2 days to get it all done.
Mm-hmm.
From Monday to Tuesday evening or Wednesday, but we were here Saturday with five people. We've then had people here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, so it's all kind of gone on.
Yeah,
but they always kind of start and go on a little bit further.
Yeah,
and there's no planting yet, so
I know, Tom, you've been very kind.
You should do the planting in a day,
you reckon?
Yeah, you could.
Thing is, I kind of wanted to be inclusive, because the lady up there, she actually seemed really keen. That was the main reason.
Yeah.
When I said to her, "Oh, we're doing Saturday," she said, "Oh, like, I'm working Saturdays. If I'd known earlier, I would have changed my day." So you've basically made this happen. You've been very generous with your workers' time.
It's a good time to do it, right? Because the grass hasn't started growing yet.
Because how did it start? So I got the funding
through Gosha.
I saw you outside. Was it you I saw personally?
My guys. Yeah.
I saw your guys and I thought, oh, they look like they're mowing the lawn. And so I went out and talked to you about, I can't even remember what the first thing I spoke to you about was, but then it occurred that maybe you could help with the planters.
Yeah, I think Gosha contacted me. Gosha, who works with Swan Housing, had said there's a lady in this development who wants to do some with the community stuff and to approach us to approach Jenny UK to do a bit of help with you guys.
Yeah, because it was quite a while ago now, wasn't it? I mean, we did the bid last year. They announced that we won the bid in August.
Yep.
It took forever for the money to finally come through via a local charity.
How was the bid? Was it hard to...
No. Actually. Just someone I know from the market encouraged me to do it. And we've got some idea of like how much bought planters cost, which is a lot. You get like two... they're quite crummy compared with these. I mean, they're not crummy looking, but they're like tiny.
Yeah.
And you don't get much for your money with a prefabricated one. And then I think you might have suggested that you could build them for us.
Yep. Well, it's community development stuff, which is always good. So, yeah.
And it looks good for you because you can get your...
We can always help. We do a lot of community development wherever we can.
I was
warned that you were quite proactive.
I think Gosha told you that I'd try and persuade you to do more than you wanted to do.
That's right, yeah.
And look what's happened.
That's right, yeah. Once you're in it, you're in it.
Yeah, but you've been very kind. And it wouldn't have been like a quarter of the project or an eighth of the project if it hadn't been for you. So
we appreciate it. We really do. Yeah, because it's just concrete here. It's just really grim and grey. And your chaps are saying that they find it quite sort of, it's a bit bleak here.
This corner is a bit more concretey. Yeah, does need a bit of life.
Yeah, and there's a lot of concrete. Yeah, the trees are sad. The tree pits are sad. Yeah. There's a lot of sadness. Yeah. But not anymore.
No,
it's very jolly.
I think you'll see on the weekend when all the plants are in, it's looking colourful.
It's going to look very different.
People will begrudgingly start to be happy that their car spaces are gone.
Yeah.
And then once they can sit down and have a chat in the summer,
they'll
start to appreciate it. When it becomes a little spot for people to hang out, then you'll start to see a little bit more. People might start popping down.
I've spoken to everyone. They like the idea of the seating area. Well, Chris is doing a sterling job with the raking.
I know.
I thought it was full ages ago, but she's kept going and it just keeps raking it and it just keeps filling. It just keeps spreading to the edges.
Yeah. And then it'll compact down. Then you'll need more on top.
Sound of the plants arriving. To take them all off and put them on here. Sorry to start with so many of them. So we've got our first gardeners here. First gardeners.
That's it.
Got Laura planting some.
Okay, so let's go and grab some stuff then, Laura. Wait, we've got loads.
Gonna come and do some digging. You're very welcome to if you want to. She's like, no, just pretend I'm not here. Okay, all right, we've got everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Not everyone's a digger. Yeah.
Can we see the daffodil? Oh yes, next to your mum. That's lovely.
They got daffs. Got some flowers. My gosh, there's a lot of plants here. There's a lot. There is a lot. These smell so nice.
Yeah. The lemon thyme.
Got some ferns. Got some.
I've got an extra one here, Lisa. I can't see where.
Vinca minor.
Okay. Yeah, are we going to move this Hebe? Are we leaving it here?
Not sure. What do you think?
I just think we leave it here. See what happens.
Yeah.
Here.
Sussed it.
Sure.
And this is beautiful. Jantalis just gave me this.
Oh. Which building are you? Are you?
Oh, just literally round the corner.
Oh, good. So pleased people have turned up because you never know.
I came out the window and couldn't see anyone. I thought, oh, is this the lawns? And then I thought, let me just walk round and saw you guys.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to just sprinkle these around.
I also took some sage out and put them on the wheelbarrow. I'm not sure if those are the ones.
Yeah, okay.
Morning. Yeah, just start wherever. Lisa's kind of laid them out in the vague formation that they're going to be in.
So you could just go there and ask them if they're doing a cutting.
So dig a hole roughly like the size of the pot and like the same kind of depth and width. And then, yeah, once you've got enough of a hole, you can take it out of the pot.
There's a lot, aren't there?
Yeah. A bit nicer to look at, isn't it?
This one? Yes.
That one. What is that called?
Fatsia.
Oh, Fatsia japonica. Yeah. This one. Oh,
I
my goodness.
This is an indoor plant.
No. It looks like one, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This one. Smell it. Can you smell it? Can you pinch the leaves a little bit and smell your hand?
It
smells like
mint.
It's like, it is a little bit actually, isn't it? But it's a thyme. It's a lemon thyme.
You can cook with this.
Yeah, pretty good.
That's just familiar.
Yeah. Smells familiar.
That was in my school.
Thank you.
At home. Yeah. That's my lollipop.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, perfect. Okay, who's taking it out of the pot?
I'm Vivian.
Go on then. Let's take that out of the way. Okay, there you go. You know how to do it? Squeeze the sides of the pot and then turn it over, put your hand on the top so we don't lose it. That's it.
Yeah.
And then we'll turn it over carefully. That's it. See, look at that, all those bulbs at the bottom. Can you see those? That's all what makes it grow. We're watering now. How are you finding the watering experience?
Pretty calm, I guess.
Pretty calm. It is quite calm, isn't it? Yeah.
So when you walk past, you'll be able to say, I planted that one.
Done loads.
Yeah, we have done loads.
Yeah, it looks great, doesn't it? This one's much kind of grassier. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've got one big one left to plant.
One big one.
Yeah,
you can help with that one.
You can help with this one.
Yeah, that's a biggie.
You can help too. It might be a teamwork. Come on in.
I think I'll do the other side.
With my fresh set of eyes, can I just say that this one is in a straight line with that one, whereas there it isn't. So can we move this forward to about here?
Yep.
Cool. Before it settles in too much, is that right? I mean, you wish I'd stayed over there now, hadn't you?
I can't believe how many plants have come.
I know, hundreds.
Amazing.
A substitute that they could have come along and these plants.
So we're on day two of the planting. Doing a sort of tree pit area by a playground that was a bit sad looking before. We've got two local councillors and another councillor, but not local, am I right? Yeah.
Local resident.
Local resident. Yeah. Ah, nice. So you live in the area.
I do.
Yeah. And sorry, I know Rachel's name, but I don't know your...
I'm Sasha.
James.
James. Paul.
I grew up here in Forestgate, yeah. But I now live in Lilford.
We're doing some planting, and isn't it nice?
It's lovely. I've been councillor here for 8 years, and every time I've walked through this estate, I've always looked at all the space that there is and thought, this is such a good example of a place that could be so much better. Like, it wasn't terrible, but it just was a bit unloved, and definitely nothing green. And so seeing this kind of thing happen is the kind of work that I've just always wanted us to be able to do. Just so brilliant to see it all coming and see everything growing.
Yeah. It's nice to have the community assembly fund as well. I don't know if you're all Newham, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's just been amazing. It's really nice to see kind of little pockets of green popping up around the borough.
Yeah, and I think if you look at all the projects across Newham as well, they swing really heavily towards community greening.
Yeah.
There's lots and lots of planting projects. And I knew there was a lot of that kind of late energy in Forestgate, but I didn't know how much of it there was right across Newham.
Yeah.
So I think that's then going to inform how we shape the budget in future as well for more greening across the borough now that people have shown how much they value it.
How it works is a participatory budget, they call it, isn't it? Yeah. It's quite common in like Europe. I remember going to Lisbon and hearing about they had it there, and so people were like pitch ideas basically and then like get people to vote for them. And so there was a lot of greening in the first place, and then lots of greening projects got through, presumably.
Lots of success for greening projects, which is great to see. Really good.
I think it originally, participatory budgeting started out in Porto Alegre by the mayor there in the 80s.
Where's that?
So in Brazil.
Oh, okay.
Brazilian Workers' Party. Cool. It was their idea, and they started out with people would be able to attend their workers' councils and things like that and be involved in their local community. And it was, I think it was mandatory that they had to attend and participate in their local community, which I think is a really nice idea. I think when you get that engagement, then people take ownership of a space like that a bit more, which is really nice.
Yeah. I was a bit worried that like maybe there'll be like littering, or that maybe some of the plants would have been like messed with, but no one's touched anything. And it's really nice to see like different people sitting, like kids coming along and like looking at the plants. A woman came up earlier and she said she grew up on the estate, and she said she was like so pleased to see it, and her mum's still here. Just said what an improvement it was. It's really nice.
It's, and then really nice.
Yeah,
there's so many things I think in local government and being a local councillor that you feel like quite helpless about, and actually greening is one of those few things where you can actually point to something in 2 years when it's still there and even more beautiful than when you started and say we achieved that, and that's the thing that you know happened.
I think planting always feels like a metaphor as well. You can't escape it, like if you're getting your hands in the earth and if things are growing roots and flowers are blooming, like it feels like much more than it is, which is a lovely experience too.
It's an incredibly cheesy quote, and I can't believe I'm gonna say this, but there's a really nice quote that's says to plant a garden is to believe in tomorrow, which I think is like there's something actually really political about that, because it is saying, you know, I think that this is going to be here in 2 years time, and I believe in the world that will be here in 2 years time, which is really nice.
That's so nice. I don't think that's cheesy. That's really sweet. I think that's lovely. Yeah, are there any other councils doing kind of participatory type things like this, or
I don't know about across the country. I only know sort of like the roots of participatory democracy and budgeting, but I don't know too much.
Not in the same kind of way. I mean, I think most local authorities have got some kind of ability for residents to come up with small-scale project ideas and ways to kind of bid for funding, and they might badge it in different ways or put it in different places, but there's normally somewhere where somebody can help you make something small happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
came out this morning at 10 and I was like, there's no one here. I was wheeling the plants out, like, ah. But yeah, it's nice to see people coming along again.
Yeah. Well, thanks for all coming along.
We know how to live.
So Donna and Miranda, you're doing like a lot of the planting. Donna was here last time. Miranda's made it this time.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed just
seeing something nice and pretty. That's what we want.
I've been living here a long time, and for many years I've seen like plants come and go, and it's actually nice to actually take part in part of the community spirit of actually making it more beautiful.
Good.
And walking around and watching it grow, because I do like to see plants grow.
Yes.
So actually being part of that is a different level altogether, I think, good. For me.
Yeah, we were sort of running around flyering people, and you never really know like who's going to turn up. But I mean, if anyone turns up, that's a good thing. And Donna, for you, you can see the plants out your window now, so that's quite nice. Yeah. It's nice to get digging.
And knowing that you've invested your time and energy, and you feel protected
about
the space.
So if you see someone misusing it, they're probably going to get a look. So I find that you need to tidy up after yourself.
Yeah, I've seen a few people kind of sitting on the bench over there. It's quite nice. A lady this morning just having a cigarette, obviously on her way to work, just a little quiet moment. And this is quite nice to see, like different people, kind of older people sitting on the bench, kids. Yeah,
I think that's what plants do. They sort of give you a sense of peace where you can actually sit down and enjoy life and take things in for a little while and slow down.
Laura, I absolutely love that. I think it's the most Laura thing imaginable. I love the fact that really early on you say, I think you're talking about some planters, and you say, do you think we need to drill some holes in that? I'm a bit worried about the drainage. which I know you say with a smile on your face, but man, you meant it. And if they hadn't said, oh, let's not bother about drilling holes in that, I mean, actually, she agreed with you, you would have carried on badgering her about drilling those holes because you were worried about the drainage until those holes had got drilled and the drainage problem potentially was sorted. I think the whole thing is a tribute to your tenacity in many ways.
Brilliant.
How does it feel now? How does it look? And is it finished?
Yeah, it's finished. We haven't planted the trees. The trees had arrived. We were waiting for some wood chip, and we kind of ran out of space and digging power. So they're also very, very small trees that someone's donated. So I'm a little bit worried about releasing them into the wild, because you could literally just grab it with your hand and snap it. But it's finished. The plants are in.
Can I ask what trees they are? What type of trees?
They are silver birches.
Beautiful. I've got a silver birch sapling in my back garden, and it's about 3 years old now. And it was really, just a little bit of advice, it was really quite a fragile project for the first couple of years. And they can, don't worry too much, they start to bend at really extraordinary angles and you think, oh, crikey, that's no good. They do, as they go into their third years, they do kind of right themselves and really start to take off, in my experience. So there you go.
They're lovely trees, and I was recommended to get them by the local tree officer. So I've called everyone in the process of this project. But yeah, I was given them by this lovely project called Cody Dock, which is their sort of community thing down in along the Lee River. So I went along and picked them up. So yeah, the plants are in, the planters are in. I managed to get some wood chip, which I sprinkled on top. And I've started making, just everyone who walks past, I'm like, what do you think? It looks nice, doesn't it? And people giving their opinions. Most people really like it. There were a couple of people a bit worried about the loss of a few parking spaces, but everyone's been really polite. It's not like online conversations. There was one lady who was a bit kind of, I don't know, I wasn't particularly, I think my political skills weren't particularly great that day, and I made a joke about it. But she's come around, and yeah, people seem to love it, and it's really nice. And you see all sorts of people using the bench, hoping that, you know, there's a thing with benches about antisocial behaviour, and it's a place that's had quite a lot of problems in the past. But I think, as you heard, people having been involved with it are take much more ownership over it. So I have noticed that people have been watering certain areas, which is lovely to see. And it's just, I mean, the first time I saw someone walking past with a couple of kids, and the kids walked over to the planters and were touching the plants, I got a little tear in my eye. Because it was just, it's just so nice to see, you know, kids. And there's like what I presume to be a father and son. I've seen them sitting there for quite a while just chatting, and yeah, all sorts of people enjoying it, and just seeing people smiling as they're walking past when they were being built, because I was out there during the construction. And yeah, so many positive responses. It's just been wonderful. And I've wanted to do something here for literally years. It's just taken quite a lot to sort of build the courage to go, because I had to go around knocking on people's doors and saying, do you want to come and help? And, you know, just gathering people's opinions. And it's been a very long process. But yeah, I'm super happy. Well, it's done. Just really nice, yeah, to make a physical impact on the environment.
Yeah,
it's an ongoing process as well, isn't it? Because this has to be maintained, yeah, and you know that's, yeah, that's the key to all these projects, isn't it? Once they're up and
exactly
running,
keep them
as lovely as they you know when they first started.
Yeah, they shouldn't need too much watering, but after a couple of years, but for those first couple of years and coming into the summer now, they will. Yeah. And it's got to the point where the council's finally doing something about the derelict garages. I think they've put up some signs, and I think it's finally inspired them, because I think they were knocked down back in 2014, and they've just sort of been standing there half. Yeah, so it's really good, yeah.
Another detail that I thought was really interesting in your interview, I think, with one of the councillors who came on the second day, who knew a bit of the history of the movement, was that it began in Porto Alegre in Brazil, and it was an initiative from the Brazilian Workers' Party. And so it does have a traceable history, this movement. And, you know, yeah, I didn't realise that. That was news to me. I think it was news to you as well, wasn't it, Laura?
It was, yeah, it was. And yes, like I said, it was I knew it was a thing in Europe, but I didn't realise where it had come from. And it's really, what she said was really nice as well about planting a garden is about believing in the future. And she's actually pregnant at the time. So I think she's thinking along those lines. Yeah.
So. And Adam, you alluded to it before, that you've got some experience as well of going down the line of tactical urbanism.
I did my own thing. I sort of got quite obsessed about this during lockdown. I did loads of research as well. And I just wanted to clarify that I guess there's kind of tactical urbanism that can be done by members of the public, which I think is great, and that's what I did. But we've also seen the techniques being used by local authorities actually during COVID, because, you know, some of the techniques of using paint rather than really expensive materials, or to create like street art on the road, or to give places for people to sit, and all of this stuff were materials that, you know, things out of the tactical urbanism playbook, if you like, being used by local authorities. And I think it showed people what was really possible. And one of my favourite, you know, examples of it, I guess, was in reading Jeanette Sadiq Khan's book Street Fight, is when they closed down, effectively closed down Times Square, and they went out and bought loads of like just deck chairs from the local hardware store and kind of put them out. This is the city government doing this, and you know, everyone just goes and sits down straight away and knows exactly what to do. It's pop up, it's kind of guerrilla, but yeah, it's really exciting. So I became obsessed with this movement as a campaign. I went through my own kind of like local thing of installing a parklet slightly naughtily in a parking space, and people loved it. It stayed there for like 10 months. It took up a parking space on the high street.
Did you just do it without any permission at all? You just did it? Just went ahead and did it?
Yes, the former mischievous Adam Tranter did it without
not the
permission.
Mature politician, not the,
no,
yeah, not this.
And you know, I can talk about it because the council were really good about it. They understood what I was trying to do. But anyway, it got removed 10 months later because someone complained about the loss of parking, and it went, sort of got put in the back of a van and taken to the depot. So for that, I kind of like, you know, I couldn't stop thinking about it, and it's rather over the top. But if I went and bought a motor vehicle, because the whole ridiculousness of it is that we allow cars to park practically anywhere, and then as soon as you put anything that's not a car, the system doesn't know what to do. And we see that now with like bike parking and stuff like that. You know, sometimes getting a cycle hanger is very, very difficult. When you do,
and very expensive as
well. Yeah, the permit is more expensive than a car permit and things like that. So I thought, well, what happens if I built a parklet on a motor vehicle?
That's amazing.
So I bought a Piaggio Ape from eBay.
How much did you pay for that? They're brilliant little things.
£4,200.
Oh, wow.
But I was really bored during lockdown. I'd already been building furniture out of pallets, and I needed something to do, but my to rationalize it a little bit more, I've got a few friends who work for Jaguar Land Rover near where I am, and you know, they're engineers. He's taken it apart, made it like roadworthy, rewelded it, done loads of, put a new floor in it and all sorts of stuff, and we reckon it's probably worth about £7,000 or £8,000 now that it's been done up. So it's worth something. Anyway, I built a parklet on the back with a few mates, and it's got a bench, and Still sat in a car park in where I live. And yeah, people go and, you know, every day people go and sit on it, take photos of it and really, really like it.
So it's a van garden.
Yeah. It's a van garden, yeah.
There used to be a famous American cyclist called TJ Van Garderen, didn't there?
There was, yeah. People can just sit on it and, you know, there's a QR code and I get feedback every day pretty much. And one of the really nice ones was a dad who lives in the flats near this kind of desolate car park and obviously doesn't have access to the green space. And, you know, he's like, oh, me and my son come and eat our dinner here in the summer and, like, you know, it's lovely. And they sit down and chat. And yeah, I just so thought, nice. Oh, this is what it's about. So it's one of the most rewarding things I've done. It's it was a learning process and really fun. I think it shows, like with Laura's stuff, just anybody can make an impact on their community and make something slightly better. And it's very thought provoking because some people can't imagine what the future might look like or that it couldn't be any better. And you can kind of show them in a way that doesn't require much commitment from them. They just need to be able to say, oh, that's better than it was.
Yeah.
And then you can have a bigger conversation about, well, why don't we
absolutely
do the whole car park or why don't we do this or you know, or whatever.
And it does feel like a very important first step in what really could become, as Laura was saying, you know, that the fact that you've put in your parklet in your little area, you think has actually fed into some council thinking about getting rid of those disused garage box. So, you know, one thing can lead to another. And I do think, you know, there are issues at stake in our built environment that frankly 18 months ago were so niche as to be unknowable but are now really quite mainstream considerations. For example, the more tarmac and paving that we put in our world, the more the water just runs off.
Heat waves as well.
You know, and it exactly, so it feeds into all that. And these things I didn't understand or know anything about them, but you know, they're generally kind of becoming understood and appreciated. And the very existence of the word rewilding, the notion that you don't always have to mow grass and that you should let it grow, you know, the fragility of the population even in urban environments, of the bee population, stuff like this, it's all part of the same picture, isn't it? They're all interconnected, and the more you can visually represent these steps on every street corner and spread it out across our towns and cities, the better it's going to be, I think.
I think obviously Adam had made his forged his own way in terms of making his parklet. I was kind of enabled through this participatory budget, this community assembly thing. I did notice actually this week that Possible has launched a campaign to try and have this process in all councils, and you can write to your council and ask for some way or that you can ask for a parklet in your neighbourhood. And just citing, you know, the usual reasons for green space having such a positive impact on mental and physical health, just the enormity of the land that we give over to car parking. And yeah, so I guess I'll put a link in the show notes because it's quite interesting. You can email your councillor through Possible's website and just say that, you know, you want a way of introducing these things yourself. Because for most people, I mean, the funding is super helpful, and just having that process of that council can agree to something and, you know, start to enact these policies, which quite often exist but not necessarily with a method of doing it, to kind of reallocate space away from motor traffic towards people.
Yeah, and just another shout out for Possible. It's little known, but they have something called a parklet plotter.
Oh, really?
Which I guess has a couple of meanings, doesn't it? You know, it allows you to plot it on a map, but also obviously they do lots of advice and guidance on this stuff. But the parklet plotter tool allows you to look at a city, look at a place, look at your own community, and you can put layers on top. So they have a public green space layer. They have an access to green space layer. They have the index of multiple deprivation layer, and they have the cars per household layer. So you can see in an area who are the people that have the least access to green space, that maybe don't own cars. Can we support those communities in getting them, you know, access to green space through parklets? So I think that's a really nice tool. And there's a really nice kind of advocacy community in this. You know, we wouldn't be able to do the podcast without mentioning Brenda Pesch, who created her People Parking Bay in Hackney again.
Yeah, sort of legend.
Went against the system and just did it and sort of paved the way for a parklet policy. And there is now a London Parklets campaign. I think they're going to do broader stuff. So, you know, it's not just about parklets, of course, but this is a wonderful example of what can be done in a local community, and really reminded me that anyone can make a difference. Start with your own front garden. It could start with a plot of derelict land. The stuff can always be made better and quite quickly. And greenery has this wonderful way of doing things, doesn't it? Where you can just transform a space by putting a tree there. And that's what we need more of.
Cool. Well, I'm having a pneumatic drill taken to the outside of my house towards the end of this month when the builders come around, because I've got a redundant car parking space outside the front of my house that's been an eyesore for ages. So I'm going to be going down that route myself.
You're going to build a parklet in your front garden?
I'm going to build a little parklet in my front garden so that people can throw empty chicken box, fried chicken boxes into it. just for that reason, just so that, you know, little place for them to dump their fried chicken boxes.
Nice.
Good for the soil. Good for the soil.
Right, excellent. Well, I wish you all the very best in your endeavours. Do you think it'd be nice to shout out to people if they want to tell us a little bit, maybe about their experiences of getting these initiatives underway? I think the best way to do it is probably contact us on the socials, on the Twitter.
That's a good idea.
And I'm sure you know it, but if you don't, it's @PodStreetsAhead, or one word, @PodStreetsAhead. But let us know your experiences of that as well, and we might be able to read out a few of them next week. That's ambitious, isn't it?
Next week?
Next time we podcast, let's just put it like that. But in the meantime, thanks very much, Laura. Thanks, Adam. You've been listening to Streets Ahead. And our editor for this episode and many episodes before it has been Claire Mansell. Thank you to Claire. So do let us know what you think, as I said, @PodStreetsAhead. Rate us and review us and share the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it. It's bye-bye from me.
Bye-bye from me.
And bye-bye from me.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.